Morning. It's really nice to see you all. It's really nice to be together. Form is emptiness, and emptiness is form. Form is emptiness, and emptiness is form. And this expression is basic to Mahayana Buddhism and to Zen. It's at the heart of the Heart Sutra. It's there in the beginning of the Genjo Koan, which distills all of Dogen's views. Form is emptiness, and emptiness is form. And this is a way of using words to point to something that is essentially wordless, that can't be described in words. It doesn't reflect an understanding exactly, because we can't use our cognitive abilities to grasp it. It is perhaps a way of being, because if we get it deeply, deeply in our bones, in a way that's beyond words, we can know how to be in the world. We can realize our capacity to be liberated. We can be free. We can be free of we. The Buddha urged us to wake up. So if we need to wake up, that must mean that sometimes we're asleep, that sometimes we're unaware. How is it that we're unaware? We're unaware when we only see form. We see the forms of this world. I see my desk. I see my job. I see the newspaper. I see the kitchen. And we think that's all there is. We think with our minds that the world is a collection of separate things, and that we as individuals are separate from the world, separate from those things. And this leads to delusion about how to be in the world, because we're not really separate. But we think if we can just manage all of these separate things, if we can arrange them to suit us, if we can arrange them so that we're at the center of the world and all of these things are there only to serve us and to comfort us, we think that will lead to a good life and we'll be happy. But in doing that, we ignore the interconnections between things. Emptiness is what we see when we begin to wake up. We can call it emptiness, but that doesn't mean that there is nothing or that nothing matters. It means that everything is empty of a separate self. My desk, my job, the newspaper, the kitchen. None of these things exists independently. None of them is separate from what I think of as me or from anything else. All is interconnected. That is emptiness. And it's better to call it interconnectedness, really, because emptiness sounds so dead end and so negative. It's not negative. Interconnectedness is everything. Everything together, all at once, constantly arising. So we wake up, we see beyond our self-centered perspective, and we see that things are interconnected. We're not alone in our boxes here. We're connected with each other. It looks separate. It's not. We see that things are interconnected. We do this through meditation. Something happens. Our personal perspective recedes and a universal perspective comes forward. But that's not the end of the journey. Just seeing emptiness is not enough. We learn that only seeing form is a false way of looking at the world. But then we also learn that only seeing emptiness is also a false way of looking at the world. Form and emptiness exist at the same time. and they are one. And so the ideal, the bodhisattva ideal, the essence of being awake, is to operate in the world of form with an understanding of the world of emptiness, to operate in these two fields simultaneously. If we take care of form, we take care of emptiness. If we take care of emptiness, we take care of form. So we operate with a kind of dual understanding. All things are interconnected. I, as Ted, am inseparable from all other things. So I respect all other things. I see that I am all other things, and I love all things. Compassion is the natural result of waking up. But the other part of that dual understanding is that form still matters. I find myself, Ted, a separate entity, still in some ways, with individual agency and power and responsibility and the capacity to love and to change things. And I can only change things for the better if I can act with a complete understanding of emptiness, with a complete understanding that form and emptiness are the same. This is the way of liberation, the liberation of myself, which is inseparable from the liberation of all beings. I can give you an example. I can talk about my garden. It's nice to think about gardening during these dark, cold days of winter. Spring will come. Kathy ordered her zinnias just yesterday. If I'm only aware of form, I see the garden as something separate from me, something that serves me, something that I can employ to advance my own interests. My garden is not really related to other things. So if I'm considering, say, whether or not to use herbicides, I may suffer from delusion in that I only see whether herbicides are going to serve me in an immediate and direct way. They're going to give me larger and better vegetables, so why not do it? I may fail to see the impact of herbicides on the environment, however, and so my delusion causes harm. But if I take interconnections into account and realize that using herbicides can actually hurt me by hurting the environment in which I live, then I realize that using herbicides is not in my self-interest, and I'm making a little progress. But if I make the big leap to realizing that things are interconnected in a deep way, that my vegetables are connected to butterflies and bees and to the dogs that walk by the garden, and if I realize that there are further interconnections that I don't even understand, and that this is a great mystery, and that I should respect natural processes because it's best for all if I submit my desires to the needs of the natural world, which I cannot fully understand, then I have entered into a spiritual relationship with my garden and with all of the universe, and I'm awake. And I'm free because I've taken myself out of the equation to the extent that I don't place my own needs above the needs of others. And also because I am in the equation to the extent that I, like all other beings, have needs. And I can grow this garden in a way that serves my needs without distracting from everyone else's needs. My garden supports the whole wide universe, which includes me. In caring for myself as well as other beings, I am flowing with the universe. I have a liberative capacity as an individual that is being realized. And so there are three things that are basic to our practice that I would like to highlight this morning. First, we must see interconnections. Second, we must act in the world in a way that respects those interconnections. And third, we must engage in self-care as part of taking care of all things. These things come from an understanding of form and emptiness. And I can give you another example, which is at the forefront of the minds of each and every one of us this morning. And that is the example of the events of the last 4 days. It's really been only 4 days. It was less than 4 days ago when I was in a meeting with Tim on Zoom, and I got a text from Kathy saying that the Capitol had been taken over. And I have to talk about this morning. I can't ignore events that are so deep and profound for all of us. If Zen purports to be separate from the state of the world, it will be false. So I want to bring this perspective that I've talked about so far. I want to talk about interconnections, action, and self-care. Interconnections is the hardest thing. Buddhists are committed to an unflinching view of reality, an unflinching view of all aspects of a situation. It is not helpful or ethical to willfully refuse to see any part of reality. But the temptation to do that is great. The temptation to try to find really narrow channels of belief and stay there. To, for instance, embrace a conspiracy theory, because that seems like such a simple and concrete answer to a question that is really exceedingly complex. Or to descend into hatred, to draw lines that are too stark with respect to who is right and who is wrong. And I see this a lot. I see it on Facebook among folks on the left who just seem to want to stoke hatred. I see it among folks on the right who are willfully denying reality. They already have their big lie, which is that those weren't Trump supporters who took over the Capitol. Those were Antifa. So narrow, unyielding, false channels of belief. They draw us. We want to go there. It's so much easier. It's always complex. Seeing all sides of something means that we have a healthy respect for what we don't know. But that is not inconsistent with being firm and drawing firm lines about what is proper and improper behavior. On Facebook, a Buddhist lay priest, Chris Fortin, said, "Accountability is the beginning of reconciliation," and I agree. And I believe, this is personally, this is just my opinion, but I want to be clear about this, that the president should immediately resign or be removed from office just as soon as possible through the 25th Amendment or impeachment. That the insurrectionists who invaded the Capitol should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law, that the politicians who helped to create this event should be held accountable, and we need to move quickly because social media seems to be full of plans for more of this kind of thing, and we don't know how serious that is, but we need to be prepared. We may be engaged in a struggle against insurrection for years to come, and we need to be vigilant. We need to understand the role that race plays in all of this. The difference between the way these seditionists were treated and the way Black Lives Matter protesters have been treated. So sometimes great kindness requires great firmness, and this is certainly one of those times. But I will not fall into misdirected firmness. I will not fall into hatred that willfully ignores the complexities of the situation. I will not be consumed by hatred. It's not all simple. It's not all simple, clear, definitive lines that we can draw. What if your brother or your sister sees things very differently from you, or your parents, or your children? What if they embrace a philosophy that you cannot completely understand? Many of us are in that position with immediate family. There has to be something there. There has to be a source and a reason for their beliefs, and it is up to us not to close our hearts to them. We still love them. Interconnections. We have to ask, what is this? It may be the hardest thing to understand, the hardest thing to deal with, but we've got to keep asking the question. So talking about action is easier. Action, the second principle of this list I've made up just for today, means we all have the capacity to engage in liberative action. Liberative action is personal action that takes into account the interconnections between things, that springs from the great compassion that results from our understanding that we are not separate from the forms of this world. Action takes many forms. Action taken mindfully with respect for the mysteries of life, with respect for all of the possible effects that action may have, like simply tending the garden in a way that promotes the natural order, is something that changes the world. Simply doing the dishes and really being there, really engaging in it with a whole heart, is liberative because it changes us. It changes our relationship with the world. And action to directly work on the problems in our society that have led to our current great division is liberative as well and absolutely essential. And there are as many ways to take action as there are people. It's not my place to say what sort of action is appropriate for each individual. My point is that taking action is essential. We will feel better and the universe will feel better when we're doing something. Something large or something small. Perhaps you have brought your skills and your love and your dedication to some great project. Perhaps a smaller project is something that you have. Perhaps just doing the dishes is all you can do today. That's okay. Just take that step. Yes, we may be stunned. Yes, we may be hurt, but we can just take that step. Put your whole heart into one thing and see where it leads, and that can save the world. And that leads into the third thing, self-care. Because doing something with your whole heart not only cares for the universe, it's self-care as well. But we do self-care because we care for all of the world of which we are a part. We can't be a bodhisattva hearing all the cries of the world and responding to them unless we have the strength and the presence to do so. So many times we confuse self-care with self-indulgence. Most people I know, I don't ever have to say to them, hey, you're being a little self-indulgent. Usually I want to say, hey, you need to take care of yourself a little more. Because people with good intentions can put others first so much that it's detrimental to their own well-being, and then it harms others. Last week in his talk, Boucheau said that sometimes you give the Dharma talk that you most need to hear. I like that. I think it helps to take the teacher off the pedestal a little bit. Hey, we're working on this stuff too. Because I tell you, I've had a rough few days and I myself need to hear this about self-care. I've been practicing for a long time and I think I'm pretty good at being disciplined and getting things done and not being swept away by things, not getting attached to things. But this week, I was kind of knocked off my feet. And the way that manifested itself was that I was simply glued to the news. I couldn't stop watching. And I knew that was bad for me. I knew it would be better to take some breaks and meditate more and eat my meals mindfully and go for walks and maybe answer my emails. But I couldn't do it. It was too momentous. It felt like the last days of Nixon, which I remember, and some of you remember. And with the narrative and the tension of it, it feels even a little bit like the Kennedy assassination, which I also remember, and which I still really heard about in my heart every time I think about it, many, many years later. Knocked off my feet. So how do I come out of that? Well, I have a lot of gratitude that I have the responsibility of being a priest and having responsibilities at Zen Center, because I knew I had this talk to write and that focused me. And I wrote the talk that I needed to hear. Keep going, Ted. You have important things to do. So I wrote a first draft of the talk, and it went pretty well, and I went outside and I took a nice long walk, and it was good to get out into the fresh air. And there are many good reasons to try to shake ourselves out of that kind of stunned and immobile place. If we're there, some of us may be, I'm sure some of us are not. I don't fault myself or anyone else for being in that immobile place for a while, but I think we can't let it take over. We can't give in to the delusion that we have no human agency. We can't give up. For one thing, we have the long view, and that's part of interconnections. Our nation has faced great challenges before. People all over the world face great challenges, and they get through them. We will keep after this. The day-to-day struggle never ends. We never reach the completion point. Doing and being is our nature, not completing and arriving. Doing and being. We know how to stick with it month after month and year after year. The way we've had morning meditation continuously for 45 years. We know how to do this. For another, I think there are a lot of reasons to have more hope right now. The goals of sedition, of insurrection, are so out in the open that just about everybody can see it now. Maybe the fever has broken, as someone said. The sedition will not stop, but it will be seen finally for what it is. Another thing that my friend Chris Fortin said was, so many raw wounds exposed, with the possibility that it will help wake us all up. For another, we have our practice, and it helps us to know what to do when times are rough. We have repetition. We do the sitting that we do regularly, or we come to the Sunday talk. Maybe we do that every Sunday. Or we do our mindful activity, or maybe all of these things. Whatever it is, we can just stick with it. You do it because it's the time of day to do it. Those routines are really good. And this is a good time to reinforce those routines or establish new routines or habits. It's January when people traditionally do this. And we've got so much support for our practice online. We have the support of the Sangha. Just do it. Just do the stuff. And this can be so supportive when things are difficult. It prevents you from being overwhelmed by form, because each time you engage in Zen practice, you are touching emptiness. You are in the world of form, touching the world of emptiness. And it's calming, and it's liberative. So I'd like to end with something called the Bodhisattva Prayer for Humanity, which was written by Shantideva around 700 AD. The source I found for this on the internet, and I haven't verified this, it said that the Dalai Lama says this prayer each morning. And I'm going to say this in kind of a formal way. So I invite you to take whatever posture you can that helps you to be fully present with this prayer. Bodhisattva Prayer for Humanity. May I be a guard for those who need protection, a guide for those on the path, a boat, a raft, a bridge, for those who wish to cross the flood. May I be a lamp in the darkness, a resting place for the weary, a healing medicine for all who are sick, a vase of plenty, a tree of miracles, and for the boundless multitudes of living beings, may I bring sustenance and awakening, enduring like the earth and sky, until all beings are freed from sorrow and all are awakened. I'm going to read that again. May I be a guard for those who need protection, a guide for those on the path, a boat, a raft, a bridge for those who wish to cross the flood. May I be a lamp in the darkness, a resting place for the weary, a healing medicine for all who are sick, a vase of plenty, a tree of miracles, and for the boundless multitudes of living beings, may I bring sustenance and awakening, enduring like the earth and sky, until all beings are freed from sorrow and all are awakened. So that's what I had to have to say. Sorry if it seemed grim. I feel like I need to work through grim things. I hope in going through these things with me, well, I hope it's helpful.